Hey, what's going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented to you by Underdog Fantasy. I'm Vlad Sedler at RotoGut, and with me, as always, is the man, Booms himself, Mr. Jason Anthony at Boom62 on Twitter. We're recording on Tuesday night, May the 7th. May the 7th be with you, Jason. What is up, brother?
What up, Vlad? Happy Tuesday night, man. Looked like you had one heck of a fun Monday night at the Dodger game, sitting dang near front row. So I'm just trying to follow in your footsteps and have some fun and talk some baseball, my man.
Yeah, if you want to, if anyone wants to follow in my footsteps, it involves not moving the feet, which is basically sitting in front of the computer all day, all night. And so Monday night was a really, really nice treat. It was a guy that plays in the NFBC in the Scarf League here in Los Angeles. His name is Jeff Biddle. Really good dude. He invited myself, Jeff Erickson, and Scott Genstad of RotoWire, and the four of us went to a game for Dodger Stadium, and it was they were amazing seats. It was like the baseline club, so we were in the second row, right behind the third baseman there, Jake Berger, and then Max Muncy, and of course, I guess Jake Berger's wife just had a baby. By the way, good timing with Berger taking his IL stint having his baby during his IL stint, however that worked out. But dude, it was incredible. We got in there, Jazz hit a bomb right away, and then the most amazing part to me really was Shohei Ohtani, and just the fact that it really hit me. Like, I understand he's on the team, I'm a Dodger fan, but to see him in person and to see him on the team and just to see like the energy in the stadium, it was phenomenal. And it was just so nice to touch some grass and to get out.
Yeah. Anytime you get to go to a ball game with your friends and kind of get out away from the kind of day to day, kind of repetitive life that you have sometimes, it's a lot of fun. I wish as a Giants fan, I wish Ohtani all the best and the Dodgers all the best, but, I would love to go to a game, see him in person, because, I don't care if you like the Dodgers, like Ohtani, just watching that and watching what he does for baseball. It is such a good time. The only thing, I guess, is don't ask Scott Genstad to smile for a picture, huh?
You know what? Sometimes you just catch him on it. Yeah, that's his. He's always mean mugging. But yeah, it was great to hang out with him. Him and Jeff actually didn't get down until I think the second inning because the Pacers Knicks game was on. And obviously, they were in the bar watching that game. Jeff's a big Pacers fan. So, a lot of sports going on, a lot of crazy things happening. But man, what an incredible experience. And I can't even tell you how stoked I was to see Ohtani. And by the way, I am one of those quote-unquote bad Dodger fans, and I'll explain what I mean. I plan to leave in the eighth inning every whenever I go to a game. I'm only going to maybe 2-3 games max, and the reason why is because I do not want to sit in that traffic. I do not want to wait, get around, trying to get my car about around 500, 1,000 people like walking out in front of me. I don't want to stand in line and wait. I just can't do it. I'm just kind of too old for it. So if the game is competitive and it's a good one or it's a playoff game or something like that, of course I'll stick around. I'll deal with it. But if it's, it's a Monday night, I got to be up at 6 the next morning, dude, I got no problem getting out of there in the eighth inning and just beating the crowd, because otherwise it's an hour difference. And then you're getting home at midnight instead of 10:30.
No, it's an hour minimum. I do the same thing, Vlad. I do not blame you at all. Especially having two little kids. It doesn't matter if you go to bed at 1 a.m. or 7 p.m. They're waking up at the same time and expect you to be up with them. So sleep is good, my friend. It's smart, smart man. And you're planning leaving the game a little bit early.
And the other thing is, it's really crazy, being in your 40s and the way food, at least for me, just doesn't... I just can't eat as much of it as I used to. I remember being, working in my 20s and just going out for lunch for a, burrito, a wet burrito, I'll eat the whole, monster thing, or go to Indian buffet and have 2-3 plates and I'm good. Maybe I'll be a little tired for a little bit and then fine after that. Now, So, you know, we went to the Baseline Club. So they have, you know, all the food is comped, they got like some prime rib and salmon and all this stuff. And so I kind of took it easy on that because I wanted to make sure to have some Dodger dogs. So I grabbed two Dodger dogs. I made myself like a nachos with cheese and I brought it, you know, out to the game. I ate all of that, a bag of peanuts. And bro, I was dying. And I know some people like, you know, you eat a bunch of food and you just like pass out instantly at night. No, I sit with it. Like it just like sits in my stomach and it's just brutal. Like I just can't, you know, I mean, not what you expected here in this podcast today, but, you know, just not digesting food like I used to.
Well, they do say a hot dog takes an hour off your life, everyone you eat, and a Dodger dog missed take off too. So it must have been worth it, right?
Well, here's the thing. So we learned from, so Jeff Biddle, that is not Jeff Erickson, Jeff Biddle is in the like food produce industry and is an executive in there. And he actually, I guess he knows that Dodger Stadium changed their hot dogs. So they've been with Farmer John since, I mean, I was a kid, you know, Vin Scully calling them, and they switched. So it's like Cantella's now. And so when I went there, they had the Dodger dogs and they had the Brooklyn dogs. And the Brooklyn dogs are the all beef ones. But, you know, the beef and pork ones taste a little better. But the man, I don't know, it just wasn't the same. Like the casing was all like, you know, like Casey. And yeah, just it's just not the same. It's not the good old Dodger dogs I remember as a kid.
Man, and welcome to Hot Dog Analysis with FTN. You didn't know you were tuning in to listen to this, but you get a little bit of everything with Vlad and I. Kudos, by the way, to Jake Berger being really efficient and his wife for getting the kid knocked out on the IL stint so he didn't miss any extra time. That's very appreciated by any fantasy owner of Jake Berger.
Yeah, and the Marlins, it's funny. They kind of did come to play, but I was just like, I'm watching these guys and – yeah, I mean, I'm always nervous of every Jazz at bat. Like I remember that first one right before he hit the home run, he had a ball that he fouled off his foot and looked like he was in a lot of pain. And he's like, you know, he's like circling the bases, like making, you know, signs, kind of goofing. It's really funny. Like, I feel like, I don't know why, like when you're winning, I feel like it's more okay, but I guess they're just having fun out there. Right. But like these guys, like, you know, Nick Gordon, Vidal Bruján. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a very serious baseball team. And maybe it's just that stigma because ownership has been kind of a joke and kind of all the issues they had and, you know, letting their amazing GM go. But like, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be so judgmental of other teams.
Well, I mean, there's a culture that needs to be created of winning. And as a Giants fan, I know they went through this last year under Gabe Kapler. When you don't take losing seriously and you don't want to get better, losing becomes the normal. So there's that real fine line in sports of, you know, it's a long grind and enjoy it, but you got to have some red ass and really want to win and have the right guys in the clubhouse to make sure that happens. I remember Jazz was talking earlier in the season. I think he was talking about Miguel Rojas and, you know, how he made Jesus Sanchez just feel bad because he did the Soto shuffle when he first came up after he hit his first home run. And then Sanchez proceeded to go 0 for his next like 37. So there's a fine line. As an athlete, you know, you got to have fun. But man, you can't make losing too much fun because the Marlins are really bad and they seem like they're getting to be okay with that. Yeah, and I have a problem with that as a fan. Luckily, I'm not a Marlins fan, but the Giants aren't much better.
By the way, the Marlins, what do they have? Yeah, I mean, they're pretty much the third worst team in baseball, but the Astros only have two more wins than them, by the way.
And nobody on this podcast is upset about that.
Yeah. No, not at all. And the other thing about Jazz, I was thinking, making this whole, you know, free Jazz. Now they traded Luis Arias to the Padres, and maybe they'll start to let some guys go. I don't think... there are many players on that team that are not expendable, but someone was like, oh, Jazz to the Dodgers. You know what? For fantasy, I don't know how that would be because I kind of feel like the Dodgers would be the type of team that would platoon him, to be honest. So like Jazz is, he's awesome. He's amazing and everything, like supernatural talent, but he is not good against lefties. It's pretty clear. He occasionally gets, you know, connects on one and hits one over the fence, but I mean, the Dodgers, like Rays, teams like that, like they're not afraid to platoon. Remember, like Ahmed Rosario was always a full-time player, comes to the Dodgers and he's just basically platooning against against lefties. So
yeah, when you have enough talent to be able to do that, it's easy. And you know, there's something to being the alpha on a bad team, where you can steal bases at will, kind of take that extra base when you shouldn't, you know, play with your hair on fire. If you do that stuff on the Dodgers and you get thrown out, you might even be on the bench, much less platooning. So you know, kind of careful what you wish for in the free Jazz thing.
Yeah, and also, by the way, he's freed a little bit because that Luis Arraez trade obviously opened him up to leadoff, which obviously is more, I think he's going to take more stolen base opportunities, is obviously going to get more plate appearances, which I guess could have a negative impact on batting average, of course. But what did he steal? Two bases in that first game after the trade. Then he stole another one on Monday. Then homered against on Tuesday. So it's kind of nice. So hopefully that opens things up for him a bit.
Yeah, he's been really good in the Dodgers series so far. So let's keep that going. Let's get this year's Yelich to come true, right?
Let's get it. So we've got a few guys we want to talk about today. We want to talk a little bit of Fab. We're going to look at some of the upcoming schedules for the weekend and for the rest of May. But just, you know, real quick on the housekeeping end, I hope everybody who is a subscriber is enjoying what we've got going on at ftnfantasy.com. Got a really nice rotation, pretty much a piece coming out most, you know, every day of the week. And then all the heavy stuff comes out on the weekends. And, you know, we got the bullpen report by Rob Orr comes out on Thursdays. Then you got the, you know, my Fab article Saturday. I usually have an update for that on Sunday. And then Mike Mager's Drops and Disasters come out on Saturday. And then on Sunday afternoon, and this is the first week that we had it ready, the weekly projections, the FTN data ones, those came out basically before FAP, which for me was really cool because I had a chance to kind of take a look and just, you know, have a better eye for two steps that I'm looking for starting pitchers. Obviously, you know, Frank and Jenny Butler and myself and Mager and Adam Young helped out on those this weekend. So that was pretty cool. Got a nice little team there going for the weekend. And then of course, Lucas Beery's hitter primer and Eric Cross's top 100 starting pitchers. So we got all that cool stuff coming out. And then just a couple of new things that have occurred are one with those FTN data projections. We've moved actually from, you know, we've been playing around with different things, but we've moved on from a dollar value for the week, which I don't know, didn't really get much input one way or the other, but I didn't feel like it properly captured or encapsulated what we're looking for. And so now we're working with it, what we call our standard deviation plus. So it's basically you've got like, you know, 100 as your baseline, kind of how you would with, you know, WRC or even like ballpark factors. So like anybody over 100 is basically a good start. So you've got usually your Acuna's, Witts, those guys are like, you know, 150-ish. Who Lee, by the way, popped in really high this week, him and Soler. Unfortunately, Soler dealing with a shoulder injury. But those, you know, Giants going to Coors Field really popped up high in the model. So really cool thing to look forward to. And then, of course, we run those again. We update the starting pitchers for the weekend. And so we run them again for Friday through Sunday. And then the other last thing I'll mention on the FTN side is I'm now running data tables for the free agents for the bidding on Thursdays. So I'm actually populating and people can start to look at, you know, like a first look really at Fab. I'm not posting it on Twitter. I think if you're a sub or you listen to the podcast, you just kind of know it's there. If you want to take a look and see these guys, they're there. And what's great is it's an active sheet. So I will literally like 20 times between Thursday and Sunday, I will go in there, add players, remove players that are injured, tweak the average bid amount. So it's really interactive and keeps me and all the subs like engaged into like what's happening at the moment.
That is a lot of good stuff, Vlad. I'm just excited to be a part of it and excited to use it as one of my tools in the tool bag to make me a better fantasy player. And you know, it helps that 27-week grind that we go through. Every tool we have is just so valuable. And, you know, FTM just keeps adding to that, not only with the tools, but the talent around it. So it's really good, man.
Speaking of tools and talent, let's talk about these prospects, these guys, man. There's so many of them. They're coming in fast and furiously. And, man, you know what? Somebody, like, messaged me the other day. It was like, I think it was earlier, just like maybe a couple hours ago, like, man, what's up with Manzardo? Because what, he's what, 0 for 7 in his first two ever major league games? Like, I don't know what it is, but like my mentality of like, we have to be patient in this game. It's a 162 game season. The guy is literally playing in the big leagues for the first time ever. He had, you know, was on, what was it, 8 home runs in a 2 week span. He was red hot, new city, a lot of pressure. Like, who knows what's going on? Like, we know the guy that he's going to be. And that's the case with so many of these guys. Saw Jackson Holliday struggle coming out the gate. Colton Cowser was red hot, literally the best hitter in baseball. And he is hitting 100 in his last 43 plate appearances or something like that. So it's, I mean, baseball is hard.
Yeah, baseball is extremely hard. And, you know, us as human beings, it's gotten to a point where it's like, what have you done for me lately? It's, you know, that instant gratification. Like, he's called up, he's going to hit 2 homers today. That's not how it works. You did mention Jackson Holliday, that is the concern, right? Because there's only so much leash that some of these guys have. There's different levels of prospects. There's different ages of prospects. You know, with Jackson Holliday only being, I think, 20, there was an easy way to see him getting sent back down. Kyle Manzardo has about, I guess, 4 weeks while Stephen Kwan's out to really prove that he belongs. Or he might get sent back down to say, you know, is he a quad A player? Is he ready? I mean, we don't know with any of these guys. There's so many good hitters have come up and struggled and got sent back down. I mean, two of the best hitters ever in Mike Trout and Alex Rodriguez really struggled not only the first time with Alex Rodriguez, but the second time. And then he ends up as a Hall of Famer. So it's a game of adjustments, and Colton Cowser is feeling that right now. You come up, there's no game plan on you. Pitchers don't know where to throw you. Once they figure out how to get you out, they're going to throw it there every time. How are you going to adjust and show that you belong in the big leagues?
The analysis of, or the projection of starting pitchers and the upcoming schedule, I feel is so important and so key. And having an idea of how many starting pitcher lefties or righties these players are going to face, I think really shapes the way that we are attacking players in FAB, setting our lineups, and just in general, just our general strategy. It really needs to be in these little, for our fringe bats, these, or even our pitchers, these little 2 week spurts. There's a lot that we can tell about how things might go just based on matchups, because we know what the playing time might be. I think we know that, Colton Cowser has been facing, a lot of lefties lately. Baltimore is what, you know, just 3 lefties in the last like 5 games or something like that. And he's a, you know, kind of a platoon guy, on the strong side. But when you got a lot of lefties coming up, or like, you know, Matt Mervis, for example, again, you see a bunch of lefties come up on the schedule, you can almost see what management's going to be doing with some of these guys. And I was going to bring up the example later, but I might as well now. The San Diego Padres, you see them add somebody like Donovan Solano, and you're thinking like, okay, what's going on here? Old vet, you know, what are they doing this for? And I'm looking at I was just kind of doing a little analysis of the schedule for the next few weeks. And dude, it is incredibly, incredibly lefty heavy. They're going to be facing so many lefties, and they're not going to be comfortable rolling out, Jackson Merrill there a whole bunch. Luis Arias will get some days off here and there. Donovan Solano is, I mean, not necessarily like a target in even 15 teamers, but he might be valuable. The other thing that popped in my head today was, like, as soon as I saw Andy Ibañez just go nuts, what was it, like 4 for 4 runs, a bomb. What does Andy Ibañez do? He crushes lefties. I mean, he plays against them usually, like even starts off, leads off against them. He just, you know, came back on the team. And so it was the first thing I did instinctively is looking like, okay, do the Padres happen to get a bunch of lefties coming up? Because I would love, I mean, that's the perfect type of streamer. So I'm always looking for those opportunities. And it's going to be the same thing with these rookies too. Like with Kyle Manzardo, if they, you know, he's a lefty bat, if they are going to play, say, half or more than half of their, in the next 2 weeks schedule against lefties, that doesn't bode well for him because he's going to be sitting more often or he's going to be struggling. He's not going to get that consistent playing time. So there's just so much involved with us having to look ahead for the next couple of weeks with schedules.
Yeah, and to that point, it's almost a careful what you wish for with a platoon. That's, do you want your left-handed hitter facing difficult left-handers and struggling, or would you rather have him, you know, play two-thirds of the game in a big side platoon and really start to succeed? A perfect example last year was Josh Lowe. I know you had him a lot, and he had not even 500 at-bats, I think, but he did not play really against a lot of lefties, but they put him in a position to succeed. And so much data, so much analytics now, these teams are run by. It's these young guys come up and, you know, face that tough lefty as a left-hander. It makes it really difficult on them, and they really need to succeed and get that comfort level and, you know, feel like they belong in order to kind of get going. With Manzardo, what are your expectations like if he succeeds? Is it kind of a Vinny Pasquantino type profile? Do you think he's better, worse? That's kind of where I had him pegged, but I just interested to know your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a huge, he's one of the prospects I've been most excited about, so I've been kind of, you know, grabbing him where I could. I think the Guardians made a good decision. Like, they just didn't start him from the beginning of the year. They had a little bit of a tough schedule early on. Obviously, the Guardians have been red hot in these first 6 weeks. They've really been overperforming, to be honest. And they've been doing it with guys like, you know, platooning David Fry, getting the most out of Tyler Freeman. Even Bo Naylor has been solid. Like, you know, they're doing it right. They're doing pretty good. But Manzardo is somebody I think is going to, I don't think he's going to have an amazing year. I think he can, in fact, could be sent down at some point, but he'll figure it out. I think it's going to take, you know, maybe till next week or something like that. But I think he will get going at some point. In fact, I hope he does so poorly this weekend that just more people drop him. I'm totally fine with that. So expectations for him this year in a full healthy season would be like 15 to 18 home runs. You know, 50 plus RBI, maybe hit somewhere between 250, 270. But I think eventually he could be like a, you know, 280 hitter. And, you know, he's somebody throughout his minor league career has always walked at a double digit clip, has not been a massive strikeout guy. So he's got a good, batting eye. So I'm a fan. Only thing I sometimes worry about is when you think about the fact that when the Rays trade somebody away, you gotta, you know, think like, what are they thinking there? And also, of course, Progressive, not the best environment for hitters.
Yeah. I think I'm right on board with those projections. So he's an interesting guy. Obviously, was available this last weekend in some leagues, was held already. But I think there's going to be kind of a little fab war for him come this weekend because he was not drafted in a lot of main event leagues. So that will be interesting. You touched on Luis Arraez already going to San Diego. What do you think the fantasy impact of this trade? Obviously, that's another mouth to feed in San Diego. But then you look at Miami. What does that do? I know personally, I picked up Vidal Brujan in a couple leagues, a former Tampa Bay prospect that had a ton of speed. He doesn't seem to be running as much. But do you think this opens up any opportunities or closes any opportunities for anybody else?
So on the Miami front, you mean, first of all, or?
Yeah, Miami or San Diego.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's lucky yet, the fact that I grabbed Vidal Brujan a week early. Not this weekend, but the previous weekend, I had noticed he was getting ample amount of playing time. He was starting to play every day. And this was right before the Arraez trade. So I was able to grab him for a couple of bucks and on a team that needed some speed. And so I think he's one of those guys that's can really kind of hurt the batting average. But the Arraez trade was perfect for him because it does open up the opportunity for him. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's going to stick. But that team is going to, they're going to trade more guys. They're going to be got more guys going. And so these, you know, sort of fringe guys, you can expect like full-time, at bats, from them. So, I think Brujan's a guy that could be like added or dropped throughout the season in 15 teamers. I don't think he's somebody that people are going to, you know, have to go crazy on. But the typical cycle on this stuff, as we know, is he'll do nothing the rest of the week. And then everyone that has him for the most part will drop him. And then when he steals like, you know, three bags between Saturday or Sunday, then he starts going for like, you know, 15, 25, 30. People are overpaying and then he slows down again. So it's so important to kind of catch these cycles, you know what I mean? Instead of like chasing past stats.
Yeah. And I have been off on those cycles so far this year. So if I drop him this weekend, anybody pick him up because he's going to go nuts. It's just, you know, it's kind of that Murphy's Law thing going on right now. I think I just dropped Gary Sanchez because he was maybe going to go on the IL. And then sure enough, first game back, two-run homer.
I mean, I'm sure people have been dropping Ivan Herrera. You've been holding him this long. He hasn't really been playing.
I just dropped him too, Vlad.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big, big injury. And we can kind of touch on the broken arm of Wilson Contreras. Man, that was ugly. That was hard to watch. Did you see it?
I saw it before. I didn't see it live, but I saw it earlier and then I rewatched it. And I don't know, it just made me kind of sick. Like, it just sucks. Like, when you see the injury, when you're like seeing the video, then you kind of like are, you know, at least I do. Sometimes we get carried away, or I'll make like some jokes. Like, we're obviously not like laughing at players getting injured and where we don't want people to get hurt. But when you see it and you just think of, you know, just sad, even if it's not even on your fantasy team, it's just like the way it happened, the fact that something always seems to happen to him that isn't like sort of like, in, you know what I mean? It's not like he's like running and like tweak something, but he's always had something and he's got so much talent. It's just so sad that now he's hurt. He's going to be on the sidelines. You know, the Cardinals already have been kind of, you know, left for dead at this point. And from a fantasy perspective, I mean, my first thought, like I haven't really thought about it that much, but my initial thought was, I mean, if it's going to be 6 to 8 weeks, I can't hold him. I don't think I can hold him in any format.
No, with a broken arm, it's a minimum. It sure looks like a 6 weeks with that. And that is a, I think it's a drop even in the 15s and the replacement value is really low. And that just is brutal because he's a top 10, 12 round pick that was producing for you. You know, with the side note, I don't know what's going on there in St. Louis, but apparently he was being coached to extend his arm out more to try to steal lower strikes. I mean, getting your guy injured because you want to steal a strike because I mean, JD Martinez did not hit his glove. I mean, he hit his forearm. There's literally a foot between that. I mean, it's not even close. And so I don't know what they're doing over there, but that whole organization needs to be blown up and the owner really needs to clean house and they need to start from scratch because it just continues to spiral. Mm-hmm. And it's just hard to watch because there's a lot of good players and a lot of people I like to root for over there.
And, you know, everybody's complaining about Goldie and how much he's struggling. And I mean, we saw this before. I understand he's now in his mid-30s and obviously isn't the same guy he used to be. But remember, he had a really down season a few years ago. And then the next season, I think he was the number two overall fantasy player. Like, and that's without even that many steals, maybe like whatever, 10 to 12. He was bananas. There's so much, I think, has to do with like team environment. We've talked about this before and the sort of the contagiousness of winning and success begets success. But like, I mean, if you traded Goldie today to the Dodgers or the Braves, he'd be bananas. I feel like it would be like, oh, Goldie was struggling. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's definitely isolated on a team that's struggling when you're one of the few superstars, him and Arenado. But the whole team's struggling. I have a lot of Nolan Gorman, who can't seem to hit the broadside of a barn right now. And then we know that Jordan Walker, Victor Scott, you know, at least Dylan Carlson, you know, came off the IL to save them batting fifth all of a sudden. That team is just, it's not going anywhere fast. I don't know. I don't know what to do there. But a question for you about another not know what to do. Spencer Turnbull, who's been fantastic, is now moving to the bullpen. He basically piggybacked Christopher Sanchez today, who went 7 innings. So that's really hard to piggyback. What are we doing with Turnbull? Is it a hold? Are you waiting for an injury? Or is it a drop? And this is 15s for me.
Yeah, 12 teamers we should have already cut loose at this point. And just from the situation, just from the fact that he is currently not in the rotation. And we sometimes, obviously not speaking for everybody, but we, you know, we sometimes are looking to blame or think like, oh, what are they doing or blah, blah, blah. But I don't know, some managers or some, you know, front offices kind of know what they're doing. Like you have somebody like Spencer Turnbull, who's really obviously turned his career around and he's been phenomenal this year. You want to preserve him. You want to make sure that you have him as an asset all year. And so like, from that end, like kind of, you know, screw fantasy. Like they're, it's not their job to, you know, keep us happy or decide who we should be adding or dropping. And so it's on us, the onus on us as us fantasy players is to adjust to the given situation and make these analytical decisions of our own. And so I don't know, my roundabout way of saying who knows, because if somebody gets hurt in that rotation, then Turnbull's in and he's back in. But it just kind of, it works out for the fact that they don't really want him to go, you know, probably well over 100 innings. It is kind of wise to do what they're doing. It just, you know, just kind of makes sense. And it was really funny that start today. Like for whatever reason, when I heard that he was going to piggyback or Christopher Sanchez, I thought, what if Sanchez is like, that kind of motivates him? Like, oh, I've been awesome and I've been told I'm going to piggyback. I'm gonna twirl a gem here. That's exactly what he did. It was really funny.
A gem he twirled, but he's been really good. Yeah, it's hard to really motivate that guy anymore. So you had a good point with Turnbull in the innings. With coming off of not pitching for 2 years, he's not going to even pitch 100 innings. So even if Taijuan Walker goes back on the IL, it might not even be Turnbull back in the rotation because they are going to try to manage his innings. You know, you got another really big arm coming in the minors and Mick Abel through Philly. I haven't seen what he's been doing in AAA yet, but Turnbull's tough. I think it is a drop in 15s as of now, unless something changes dramatically here in the next week or two.
Yeah, good point. Mick, what is Mick Abel doing? He is not doing that great. I mean, he's got 5 starts in the minors, 6.5 ERA, about 1.67 homers per 9 and a 12% walk rate. So, you know what, that brings up a good point about, you know, I'm seeing some tweets about, you know, prospect people getting excited about guys coming up. And I don't know, I feel like over the last few weeks, like maybe I come off as like an, you know, old cruddy and that, you know, that I'm like an anti-prospect guy or whatever. I even, you know, I'm like, what it is is I don't know. I don't, these guys, like we haven't really thought about, and all of a sudden like, oh, let's go 100 plus. Oh, Joey Loperfido, you know, leads the minor leagues in home runs. And I remember, what was it? Riley a few years back was doing the same thing, got called up from the, you know, the Braves, struggled for a little bit and then started to go off. But I don't know. Like it's hard for me to wrap my head around spending 100 plus on a guy that has no major league experience, that, you know, is in the bottom of the lineup, that, you know, has a high strikeout rate, and we don't even know how long he's going to be up for. And we really only have so many shots over the course of the year in FAB. And this is something I talked about in the intro in the article for the FAB you know, column this weekend is, yeah, we got to kind of, sometimes the best move is like no move, right? Like I'm spending so much time with my, you know, conditional bids, my guys 3 through 8, and making sure, like, you know, if I don't happen to land one of these kind of higher priced guys, that I have it in the right order. Like, you know, do I want Lamont Wade at Coors for the next week? Or, you know, yes, I do want him over, say, Carlos Santana, because Santana is facing, you know, good Mariners pitchers, and, you know, kind of had his hot streak. He's probably due for a cold streak. Like these are things I'm thinking of as I go through this. And you can land on a lot of gems, like a lot of the most valuable guys we're grabbing at like $15 to $20. And it even got me thinking on, like, you know, Christian Scott, right? Like, you know, we all bought him. That's great. And he looks phenomenal. He definitely looks like he stands out to anyone's eye. And then literally the next day after people have spent 300 plus, we're hearing things like, oh, Tyler McGill just threw 4-5 scoreless in the minors. What if he comes and takes a job? You know, we start having that like buyer's remorse. So, you know, maybe we should be careful. Maybe we should not be spending these big dollars. Like there's a reason why the best high stakes players for the most part, you're not seeing them. Maybe they'll go for one of these guys per year, but you don't see them constantly bidding $100 plus on every Victor Scott, Joey Luperfito, Tyler Black, whoever that's coming up, right?
Let's keep Victor Scott out of this, Vlad. Yeah, I mean, you only have so many bullets in the chamber with your fab budget, and these guys start going for 100, 200, in Scott's case, 250, 300, 400. That's your shot for the year, because you really can't take any more of those in the last 26 weeks. So everybody's looking for that guy that changes their team, the George Kirby from a couple years ago, the Ronald Acuna, Fernando Tatis. For every one of them, there's 10 busts, and maybe not even busts. Like, you look at the group last year, the fab pitchers, Bybee and Bryce Miller and Bobby Miller, all those guys were fine. I picked up Bybee, I think, in one league with Modica for almost $400 because we had just lost to Grom. And it worked because he was an every week starter. But you look at the end of the year, it was good, not great. And did it change your team? Did it help us win the league? It's kind of got to be careful with these big bids. And a lot of these great players in fantasy definitely are more volume pickups than big individual pickups, like the fantasy football, where one pickup changes everything. Baseball is a little much more about volume and, many guys that can change your team, not just one.
And also, when you've spent a lot of money and you're looking at the fact that there are 21 fab periods after this week, so starting the Sunday, there's going to be 21 more. And we know that managers, fantasy managers, get skittish. We start to drop players that we're, worrying about. And a lot of times those guys end up becoming the best play. So instead of, kind of grabbing the rookie that was hot that just called up, what if the next or the right move was to grab an, $10 Jordan Walker and hold him for 2 weeks, and he comes back and kind of figures things out? That may not happen on the Cardinals. Of course, it's a Cardinal, but I picked up Jackson Holliday in my auction for, what was it, $19. I don't know if that's a good move, but I kind of need a really good middle infielder for the rest of the year, and I'm willing to wait, 3 to 4 weeks with him because I don't have a lot of injuries on that team. So, moves like that, I'm willing to make, because Josh Lowe maybe isn't the best example but he was awful as a rookie and then was pretty much forgotten about in draft season. That's why we were all able to get him last year, like in the 30th round. But it's sometimes those guys that get a little bit of a taste and then come back, or even like Jason Dominguez, we're not even thinking about, he's already going to be swinging and playing. He's going to be up in a month and a half or something like that. And we're going to go gaga for him, especially the New York people. Oh my God, Jason Dominguez coming to save. And if you've got 250 left, you just can't get him. You have no chance.
Yeah. Yeah. Dominguez is interesting because they have a full house in New York right now. And obviously they don't have the healthiest group with Stanton and Judge, but with Soto, Judge, Verdugo in the outfield, and then Stanton at DH, where Jason Dominguez does not have a spot as of this second. Now that can change rapidly, but he's a guy I've highlighted. I actually have him stashed in one of my big leagues when I've been lucky enough to not need the roster spot. But I think he's uber talented and can be a real impact, but he needs a place to play too. So to your point, working in the margins is where you make money in this. So picking up that guy that somebody else dropped, yesterday's trash is today's treasure. Jordan Walker is a good example you brought up. He could be huge here, whether it's 2 weeks or 8 weeks. He's going to come back, and he did this last year, and he came back and hit. And you got him for cheap. It's just, can you hold him until when he comes back?
Yeah, and even this past weekend, or what was it, the other day, I wanted to see, so now he's down in the minors. What's he doing? Is he kind of getting his feet back, or whatever? Because he's been cold since the spring. He's just been off. And you remember, as a rookie last year, he had the amazing spring, just kind of put him on the radar, made him a top, 10 round pick. And then he had a pretty good season. End of the year numbers were pretty good for a guy that was literally 20 years old, and he did really, really well. And so, I was curious, so what's he doing in the minors lately? And, you know, he was struggling his first like four games or something like that. He had, you know, wasn't really striking out, but just, you know, just like a single here, a single there, but it was pretty much like 1-for-5 every game. And now things are starting to pick up a little bit. You know, three walks in his last, you know, game, you know, three straight games with a hit now, getting some extra base hits. He stole a base in his last one. So like, these are the things I'm looking at to get a feel for, you know, if he's somebody maybe I should put higher up my conditional, like it, because that'll gauge of like when they're coming up, right? Like same thing, Jackson Holiday, it would take, you know, the perfect storm of him kind of doing well, and then, you know, Mateo or, you know, Arias or whoever there getting hurt, or Westberg or someone like that, for it to like work out. But like, yeah, sometimes the timing is good, but I think kind of tracking their minor league stats works. And you can do that, by the way. I just go to like, you go to Baseball Reference, wherever, but like I just go to FanGraphs, and you can click on game logs and then click on minor leagues and just kind of see how they're doing, these players.
Yeah, and that's a real underrated strategy that people don't talk about or people don't do or know about. It's, hey, if this guy was drafted and dropped, he's in the free agent pool now. Now, instead of putting him on your roster and stashing him, monitor him, put him on your watch list. Is he doing well in AAA? Is he getting ready to come back up? And then try to be a week early. You can save yourself hundreds of dollars. You can get a guy for $4 instead of 400 if you do it the right way. So it's a good tool that Vlad's talking about, and monitor those minor league stats if the player's available, because everybody's got a shot for him, and people don't even know he's in the pool sometimes.
And you had thrown into our outline some of these, the next guys, like the people that we're all excited about coming up. These guys are going to be expensive, like when they do come up. The problem is I'm seeing people expecting these guys up very soon, and I don't think that's the case for a lot of them. Like for everyone that we're listing here, there's a strong reason. If you really are, you know, in tune with these teams and the front offices, like there's a lot of outs here, like the ways that they won't come up. Paul Skeens aside, because I think he is rostered in, you know, just about every league, and he's been drafted everything. So whatever, when he comes up, if you have him on your team, you should be pretty stoked. But I'm hearing some talk of, you know, Cade Horton or whatever. I don't want to take someone at face value, right? Even great prospect people, because even, you know, our wonderful, you know, prospect colleagues all over the world, You know, when you're like really locked into something, you know, like me, my Dodgers, you, your Giants or whatever, like we kind of, I don't know if it's like not see the forest or the trees or whatever, but like, it's just very glossy. Everything looks glossy. And so like, I'm looking at, for example, you know, Jackson Jobe, I don't think he's coming up many times soon. He's on the IL now. Granted, it's just like a little hamstring, whatever, but he's like 2021. He's going to have his innings way limited. Cade Horton is going to be a super exciting prospect. I wasn't even drafting him in DCs because at the time all of the prospect people were saying he's more of like a, you know, more of a 2025 guy, but maybe he'll come up at some point, you know, second half of 2024. Now I'm seeing people saying, oh, maybe he'll be up soon. But okay, let me see here. Rotation is full. They even have a good guy in like Ben Brown, who is literally moved to the bullpen, right? You got Jordan Wicks. He's coming back soon. He's already throwing. He's not amazing, but he'll be in the rotation if they need him. Kyle Hendricks will be back at some point. And then I look further. Cade Horton just moved from AA to AAA, and he was pitching well in AA. But he's actually averaging, what was like game log, last four or five games, he's averaging like four innings a start. So, yeah, he's going to be great someday. But I don't necessarily see him being like an amazing fantasy asset anytime soon.
Yeah, and when he does get the call, if he does get the call, there's no guarantee that he's going to dominate. That jump from AAA to the major leagues is a huge step, and there's a lot of really good pitchers that struggle with it. So, like we always talk about, careful what you wish for. You know, the couple ones that we talked about offline and you put on the notes, you know, Junior Caminero, I don't necessarily agree that the team is loaded. I think the Rays actually are in desperate need of an impact bat. I know they just got a bunch of people back. I know Josh Lowe's back. He's going to help them, but I don't know if this is accurate, but I was reading May 15th as a date that teams are kind of circling to get past. I don't know if it's an arbitration date or a Super 2 or I thought Super 2 was in June, but I was reading that we might see some movement May 15th. And then the other guy I think is coming sooner than later is Orelvis Martinez on the Blue Jays. And I was on him in DC season when I read an article that said that he was a better version of Hanley Ramirez, which gets me awfully excited. And he is just mashing in AAA for the Blue Jays. But, you know, God forbid, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is going to hold him back. So, you know, the Blue Jays offense just rolling too much. So why would they bring him up?
Yeah. And so, and digging into both those situations, I'm trying to figure out like the type of guy that I'd be more interested in. Like Orelvis Martinez makes a lot of sense because he's, first of all, he's shortstop eligible. Or he's as a shortstop at NPC, and then he'll get you the most likely what will be third base, you know, there. And this team really does need an infusion on offense to see Bo Bichette, who I know you are heavily invested in, and we love that. I see you shaking your head. I think he's gonna be fine. Like, I'm, you know, so Bo Bichette's hitting under 200. Like,
he's got a 2% barrel rate, Vlad. He's turned into IKF.
I know, but something's got to give. I mean, it's you're not just good. Again, I hate to simplify things. You're just not like just great at baseball your whole life and then, you know, one day suck, right? Like, we kind of knew that Kevon Biggio wasn't going to be like him and Bichette, you know, both kids of, you know, stars. They were just on different levels. We knew that they were going to be different. So I think he'll be fine. But this team needs an infusion on offense. Like, when Justin Turner and Dalton Varsho are leading the pack, you know, something's got to give. And then on the Tampa side, I'm just kind of, you know, I'm really breaking down this roster here, and it's really going to, I mean, yeah, I can see Caminero up on the 15th, but let's see, they sent Curtis Meade down when Josh Lowe came up, and he was, you know, he's a third base, second base guy. And so right now, yeah, the move would be for Austin Shenton, because Austin Shenton is, he's playing maybe like once a week against the righty. And you got Jonathan Aranda coming back as well. And Brandon Lau is coming back as well too. So he's going to get in there and platoon at second base. So they have guys that they'll get in there. I mean, I've got Caminero stashed on a couple of mains. I can't wait for him to get up, but like, you know, I know how the Rays roll. I think he'll be up at some time in May, but may not be till a little bit later.
They also have Harold Ramirez DHing. There is opportunity there. He's been good, but I don't believe that the talent coming up, I think he's going to knock down the door rather than, you know, the Rays trying to fit him in. But, you know, I could be wrong, but he seems, I was watching him in spring training and I was like, man, this guy is a dude. He carries himself like like a star. It was fun to watch. You just don't see that kind of swag in a player, and he knows he's good. And I think that makes a player that much better, because baseball's hard. So when you know you're good, it kind of makes you better.
And then on the, you know, kind of one last point on these rookies or these guys that are dropped, like Jack Leiter was another guy I was really interested in this weekend. And I mean, I wasn't putting more than $3 to $5 on him. I got him in one league for $3, and it wasn't just like, oh, it's against Oakland. But, you know, that's the kind of thing I like. Those are the type of opportunities I like to take advantage of. A, you know, good prospect. He's doing really well in the minors, comes up and his first shot in the majors and was a little nervous and got blown up. And then at some point he comes back. And I understand Nathan Eovaldi will probably out for the, you know, for a short period of time. There might be an opportunity for Leiter here beyond what we'll see. Robert Gasser, he's our boy. We've been talking about him since the preseason. I know we have a lot of DC shares of him. He's supposed to make a start this week because, he was injured in the preseason. We thought maybe he might make the rotation. He didn't. But Freddy Peralta serving a suspension. So I think Gasser might come up on Friday, but I'm not expecting much. Even though I'd love for him to do well. Like, I mean, he's been on the IL for most of the year. He's kind of just coming back, but I think he'll be good eventually. But I would love for Gasser to come up, you know, kind of like, you know, do whatever, maybe pitch, you know, 3-4 innings, give up a few runs, but then get into the player pool. Right, he gets in the NFBC player pool, people forget about him, and then we kind of time it and pick him up at the right time.
Yeah, I think he's had 2 starts in AAA since coming off the IL. He was a guy that coach speak in preseason, the manager just was raving about him and the role he was going to have on the team. So it'll be interesting what he does if he does come up this week. Is he a star? I don't think so, but can he be a serviceable rotation piece? Absolutely. So definitely excited about him. Only other guy to touch on is James Wood. And talk about a guy that's beating down the door in Washington, but there's a lot of bodies in front of him. So you think Stone Garrett's coming first. They obviously have Eddie Rosario. They got Jacob Young. They got Victor Robles. Lane Thomas is coming back off injury. There's not a lot of talent there. There's a lot of bodies, but it'll be interesting how they handle him because he looks like an absolute star as well.
And that reminds me of as first thing I want to look at when I think of James Wood and you know, like who's blocking him. I want to see what Stone Garrett's doing, and I see Stone Garrett's back. He's been up for what, 7 games, and he's been pretty quiet. Actually, he's been pretty loud on the strikeout front. He's got this is crazy. So 7 games, 26 plate appearances, just 1 run scored, a 46% strikeout, a 182 average. With a 400 BABIP. So again, 7 games doesn't mean much.
I was just going to say a 182 batting average with that high of a strikeout rate is actually pretty good.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. All right, we're going to talk to kind of wrap things up here, looking ahead to the weekend, looking ahead to the second half. Quickly, a word from our sponsor that if you want to make money making picks on MLB games, then you got to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In the Underdogs Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball player and predict whether they'll go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to use the promo code FTN, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100, so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's underdogfantasy.com on Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with the promo code FTN and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18. Or older, 19 or older in Alabama, Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncbgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In California, or in New York, I'm sorry, it's 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. And in Tennessee, it's 1-800-889-9789. All right, looking ahead to the weekend. The Rangers in Coors Field. The Rangers are starting to pop off. I think we saw the Leody Taveras about to go off coming here. So how's this team looking for you? Minus Wyatt Langford, of course.
Man, who would have thought with Langford? That's nuts. Jonah Heim starting to hit. Seager looks like he's finding his stride. Nothing like really getting going into Coors. I mean, it's really not much advice needed. I mean, you're starting every batter you can when you're going into Coors, and any Rangers you really have is not an option as far as platooning or not. So throw them in your lineup and hope to get healthy because that team's really starting to click.
As far as players that we're looking to bench in NFBC this weekend, and mostly these would be left-handed bats that might have at least 2 lefties that they're facing. So which means they'll either sit, because they're in a strong side platoon and they're not going to play, or it's just not an advantageous matchup for them, or maybe they'll come up and pinch hit. But either way, a few of those guys, and unfortunately, one of them is Willier Abreu of the Boston Red Sox. They're going to get 2 lefties this weekend. Same thing for a couple of Arizona guys, Jock Peterson and Jake McCarthy. Same thing with Michael Massey. Michael Massey has been red hot for the last week and a half. He had a nice first half of the week because they were facing mostly righties, I think 3 of 4, but they're going to face 2 of 3 lefties on the weekend. Mike Massey might sit. And then the guys I want to ask you about, the Philly guys. And again, we're talking about, this is like, I don't feel like we have a lot of options, right, for the most part. Like we don't have like, you know, deep benches that we're able to just kind of rotate guys in. A lot of times we're just playing who we have. But like if you have the opportunity to sit Brandon Marsh, or Bryson Stott, who don't necessarily play that much against lefties, they're facing 3 Miami lefties on the weekend. Would you try to sit him if you could?
Yeah, Marsh, I'm definitely trying to sit. Like you said, you don't always have the option to sit. Stott, I'm starting just for the stolen base upside. He gets into games. I don't see him sitting all weekend. And even going back to Massey, like he's starting to play against some lefties. So I probably see what the lineup is on Friday to make that decision. But he'd be kind of close to playing for me. You want to maximize these matchups, and you want to get maximize at bats. That's one thing I track each week is how many at bats each team has. And I'm usually the magic number is about 300 for the week. But it always seems when I'm struggling, I'm down in the 250s to 260s. So that's just, it's not maximizing at bats. So when you do have, two lefties on the weekend and you're starting someone else to maximize those at bats if possible.
By the way, Philadelphia's Alec Bohm, who was an FTN darling, I would say, for where he was going. We were big proponents of him, just as far as a guy that we thought had upside of hitting 290 plus. Again, this is a guy that almost scored or almost drove in 100 RBI and wasn't known as like a big power guy. And so guys like that, I feel like fall under the radar, especially when they don't steal too many bases. But he's been on fire. I think he's hitting around 350 this season. Every time I look, he's got a couple of hits. Always get something done. With those lefties that they're facing, Alec Bohm so far this season, he's got a 214 WRC plus against lefties. That's top 10 in baseball. In case you're curious, some of the other guys who are like the best hitters in baseball against lefties, Adley Rutschman is number one. His WRC plus against lefties is 267. He's only striking out around 14% against them, and he leads the league in RBI against lefties. That's 18 ribbies he's got in 24 games, 58, almost 58 plate appearances against them. Other good guys against lefties, Mark Canha, Tyler O'Neill, Will Smith of the Dodgers has been absolutely red hot, Marcelo Zuna, and then you got David Fry and Josh Naylor. Both those guys have been crushing the lefties.
Naylor's interesting because that's lefty on lefty crime right there.
Yep.
He's just been hitting really good all around. I think you could win a bar bet with that Adley Rutschman number you just threw out. That is a crazy WRC plus against lefties.
It's a 482 batting average, a 500 OBP, and a 523 BABIP.
Is that good?
By the way, highest BABIP against lefties this year, so far is Jose Caballero, 588.
You don't like him at all.
No, I do not get super excited every single time he steals a base or four in a game. By the way, you know who has the lowest BABIP against lefties? You won't believe this. It's one of the best lefty hitters in all of baseball. He plays in against the Mets or for the
Who?
Mets. Pete
Alonso?
Alonso,
Yeah.
zero.
It's hard to get on base. Did your adoption paperwork for Caballero come through yet?
Oh man, he's dude, I'm
Is he a settler?
he's yeah, he's like, he's, I guess he could be my son, yeah, but yeah, we're like, he's like my cousin's son or something like that, dude. I get so excited, man. Like my punt MIs, him, Brendan Donovan do something like, they didn't all work out. Tim Anderson obviously is stinking. Mason Wynn hasn't really been doing all that much. Luis Rengifo, I don't know what the heck's gone with him. I don't know what he's got, but he's been scratched like 3 days in a row.
Yeah, he keeps getting in the lineup and getting scratched. So, whatever that means, it's a little strange. Hard to
Position
decipher what's going on.
eligibilityitis. He's just got too many positions.
He didn't know where he wanted to play, so he just said, I'm out.
I'm out today. Your boy, San Francisco, by the way. Dude, I had a thing this week. I was like really feeling Lamont Wade Jr. I thought he was just gonna have a big week. He hasn't really gotten going power wise, but who was it? It was I think it was somebody from I forget who. Anyway, somebody was mentioning how Lamont Wade is just a couple plate appearances away from actually like qualifying and has the highest on base percentage in baseball. I think it's something like 490. Yeah, it was Travis Hochek, I think, was talking about it. But Lamont Wade is like pulling like Juan Soto type walk numbers.
Well, I mean, he's batting 350 with another hit today and three more walks. It looks like a pretty good pickup so far. Two RBIs today. So That gut is working overtime, Vlad. You're rocking it.
Well, then this weekend, that's the thing. They get two lefties and a righty. So he'll play one at minimum. Maybe he'll play two just because he's so good. But like him and then Yaz, Mike Yastrzemski, you'll probably be benching. And then obviously the Giants are one of the heavier platoon teams in baseball. So they'll put Austin Slater at the top of the lineup. Flores will probably hit third. Flores will get going at some point too, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, every year you look at the baseball card and when Flores has 20 homers, 80 RBIs, he just produces every year. So it's just a matter of time. He somehow finds the at-bats, even though it feels like he's not playing. He always ends up getting 500 at-bats. He's a good guy to have on your team just to kind of fill in because he's going to hit at some point.
And we'll be doing our what we're recording here on Tuesday night. Man, the week goes by so fast. But on Thursday, Jenny Butler and our team are going to be working on our projected lineups for the weekend. Projecting those plate appearances is so important. So we will have Frank running the simulations again Friday morning. So you'll have, if you do have actual fantasy decisions to make on the weekend in NFBC and your whole team is not injured, FTN will help you with those with our projections that'll come out. Looking as far as just, I wanted to look at what the schedules would look like, going back to what we were talking about earlier, for starting this upcoming Monday for a couple of weeks. So what ends up being like kind of almost the second half of May, just get a feel of, it's hard to project how the rotations will shake out as far as lefties or righties, but we usually have a good idea based on the teams they're facing, right? If a team's going to face the Miami Marlins twice in the next 2 weeks, you're probably going to be facing a lot of lefties and you want to kind of project those matchups. But I just want to look just as far as like just, on paper side of, quick glance, who's sort of got the best schedules in baseball, who's got the worst. And it's kind of sucks how unfair it works this way, but like the best teams, it turns out, have the best schedules in the second half of May. And I'll tell you, one of the Astros, they need it actually. Like we talked about their 12 wins, they're going to face the A's twice over the next 2 weeks. So, starting this Monday, two series with the A's, they'll face the Brewers and the Angels. So they'll see some lefties there. The Dodgers are going to get seven against the Cincinnati Reds, and then they'll also get a series with the Giants and the Diamondbacks. And then you got the Phillies, another great team. They're going to face the Mets, Washington, who's got a few lefties, Texas Rangers, a pretty good rotation, and then they're going to get a series in Coors.
Man, the Phillies are turning into just a monster offense. I mean, they've been a monster offense, but they're at home now. You almost can't start your pitchers against them. They are just destroying ratios. And that's with Turner going on the IL, they started hitting more. They're a dangerous, dangerous team. And I guess you look at schedules anytime you see the Dodgers, Braves, Phillies, they're going to look pretty attractive on schedules, but this looks even more attractive. So it's interesting to look out a couple weeks.
Yeah, maybe it's good for somebody like maybe you're thinking about cutting a Nick Castellanos or something like that in your 12-teamer. Maybe you're noticing he's heating up a little bit lately. Like maybe, kind of think twice about those type of decisions. By the way, Cody Clemens has hit, 2 home runs 2 days in a row. And so if he gets hot a little bit, I just can imagine, we've seen this scenario a million times. Like, people will just kind of bid on him. They'll go 30 plus, and then either get sent down to the minors or just goes 0-for-30 or something.
It's a yearly tradition.
As far as teams with extreme handedness. Oh, real quick on the bad schedules, there weren't really all that many that stood out. Everything was pretty neutral. But I don't love the Reds, and just for the fact that they're going to face the Dodgers twice over the next 2 weeks. So one series in Cincinnati, one series in LA. They'll also face the Diamondbacks, probably run into to Gallen and some good pitching there. And then also the Padres, who obviously have good pitching as well. So my thought is, looking ahead of this before the weekend, I'm thinking somebody like Will Benson, Jaime Candelario, who's kind of cold and hurt, Jake Fraley. I don't mind cutting these guys in 12s. And then when the schedule gets better, I'll pick him up again. But I think outside of like Ellie De La Cruz and Spencer Steer and like maybe Friedel, I think most of these Reds are like okay to cut in shallow leagues for the short term.
Well, Jazz Chisholm says differently about facing the Dodgers pitching. They've actually made him look really good this last couple of days. Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those things, you know, guys are hot, guys are not. Matchups, you know, some guys hit off good pitchers, some guys don't. The Dodgers rotation is not as dominant as it has been. Yamamoto looked good tonight. Obviously, Glasnow's been dominant. But there's some guys that can, you know, get hit. You know, Walker Buehler is still coming back. He looked very hittable last night, but he's still easing back into it. So, I don't know if I would be as extreme with the Reds schedule, depending on matchups, lefty-righty. I got to dive in a little more, but I'm not as extreme. I don't look at bad schedules as much as I'm looking to target good schedules, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah, it makes total sense. And then as far as like the handedness extremes, the Mets are going to get a lot of lefties coming up. And we're facing guys like Ranger Suarez on Philly, all the Miami lefties, all the San Francisco lefties. So, you know, that's good for a guy like Starling Marte, good for JD Martinez, maybe not so good for Brett Beatty and DJ Stewart. By the way, Harrison Bader has pulled a full 180 on his profile. The guy is a righty bat who's always hit much better against lefties, and that's completely reversed. So I think this season so far, he's got like 120 WRC plus against righties, but then only like 50 against lefties. So I don't know that means much because he hasn't been really playing much lately, but there's just one thing there about the Mets.
Yeah, that's interesting because when you put in the outline, it's bad for Beatty with all the lefties. I was like, wait, I thought he was righty hitting lefties good. But looking at the actual numbers, he's been god awful against left-handers this year, and he's starting to lose a little playing time. So maybe it's not a good thing for him.
The Tampa Bay Rays, they're going to face a ton of righties. So obviously for somebody like Josh Lowe, that's pretty good. It'll get Ben Rortvedt. He's looked good, man. I've been watching some Rays games. I think he's a solid hitter. He more than just a bodybuilder apparently, but Ben Rortvedt's going to be playing more than Alex Jackson. We know Rene Pinto was sent down. Richie Palacios not dead yet. I think he's going to keep going. Brandon Lau will be there, I think, next week. It's not the best for Caballero. I think he runs less against them. And obviously we mentioned that super high BABIP against lefties. And then, dude, I swear, I'm not throwing shade here. I know a lot of people picked him up and they're sneaky, and I know he's been red hot, but Johnny DeLuca, you know what? These are still the Rays. If they're facing a whole bunch of righties and they have a full outfield, I don't think DeLuca is going to be getting that everyday playing time that people think he's going to.
No, I looked at him, but he was down my waterfalls, but he was pretty far down. And maybe you guys are just smarter than I am because he came up and hit a homer, had four RBIs, and he's already worth a pickup for this week, but the schedule ahead does not look like he's going to get a lot of playing time. So we shall see. But, you know, former Dodger farmhand, so you should know a lot about DeLuca and if he's any good or not.
Andy Paez is much better. He's a stud.
I'm a fan.
He's amazing. He's really amazing. By the way, someone's asking like, oh, what are the Dodgers going to do with James Outman, when Jason Hayward's coming back? Outman's a very streaky guy. Outman will get going at some point when they got a bunch of righties on tap. Hayward, I think, is going to be a while. I still think he's been, you know, he's not healthy, so he'll be out a while. And then I didn't mention that at some point they got to send down Gavin Lux. As soon as I sent a tweet about Miguel Vargas and sending Gavin Lux, he hit a home run, I think, maybe a minute later.
It's amazing how you motivate guys, Vlad. And did that sound as funny coming out of your mouth about getting rid of Outman for Jason Hayward as it sounded?
Yeah, it is weird. Yeah, no, that's not gonna happen. But it's, I don't know, it's Freddie's buddy. I don't know, Dave Roberts. Well, I mean, who knows?
There is some clubhouse aspect with Hayward. He did fit right in there. So there are some pretty bad hitters on the Dodgers, I think, that can go before Outman.
Chris Taylor.
Yeah, he's pretty bad. So we shall see what happens there. And then you got the Padres on here coming up with a lot of lefties. And that's why you kind of brought up Donovan Solano early. I'm not really worried about Luis Arraez. Anytime you have a two-time batting title winner, I'm not really worried about lefties or righties. Jackson Merrill for sure, worried. And then Cronenworth, it'll be interesting what they do with him if they play him every day against all those lefties. What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? He's been, you know, because there's a man, I forgot his name. Is a really cool dude that tweets about the Padres all the time. Goes by like the Giannis, Antetokounmpo, whatever. Anyways, he said something about Cronenworth like being their best hitter, and I'm looking at him. I was like, yeah, he really has been. He's been incredibly consistent, and he's hitting third in that lineup every day, whether it's a lefty or righty. So he seems, he's never been an amazing fantasy player, but he breaks up those lefties really nicely. I'm sorry, the righties. So like right between Tatis and Machado, he fits in really nicely. But really, we're bearing the lead here. Like Jerkson Profar has been like one of the hottest players in baseball for the last month. He's absolutely incredible, and facing all those lefties will be good for him too.
He's finally lived up to the number one prospect in baseball. It only took him eight years.
That's right.
He's finally fulfilled it all.
I forgot about that. That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, that's it, man. We're a little over today. Any last minute thoughts here before we sign off?
No. Should be a great week. Summer's finally here. It feels like we're in May. Got a couple weeks, probably into May, before you really start looking at standings, see where those teams stand and how much, how buried you are, if anything, and how much work you have to do, because this is where the standings start to get a little more stagnant and less movement. So keep the grind up, and really enjoyed it tonight, Vlad.
Yeah, fun as always, my friend. If you get a chance, my friends, please subscribe, please rate, please review. Jason and I would very much appreciate that. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. For my co-host, Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. And we'll talk to you next week.